Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to Nobody Panic! We are live from the Fringe. We are two live. Woo, 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 woo. Tess is doing her customary train conductor thing that I often will let it out, but not this time because it's going out as is, guys.
Guys, it's a visual medium, so it's me like sort of pulling on the train. Choo choo. pulling that train.
That's
oh my
are.
God, guys, it's day a million of the Fringe or something. We've been here.
I feel like I was born here and I feel like I have died here.
Yeah.
We are looking significantly worse than the first one, which was on the 7th. Actually, Tessa, you look radiant today. Doesn't she look great? Now say it back.
My hat.
I couldn't reach her. I'm too tired to reach.
To be a conduit for you two who have sort of slightly grown weary of each other.
Oh, that's a great point, Nish. We should introduce the man in the house.
Oh, sorry.
Oi.
We've got some man. This is Nish Kumar that you're listening to, popular comedian who is about to be going on a tour around the UK.
Please buy tickets.
is it like nishkumar.com that they can go
on? nishkumar.co.uk. Please buy tickets. Also, some of the ticket links are broken, so maybe just incorporate old Captain Googs.
Now, as a stand-up, I know that you put the mic quite close to your mouth.
Oh, yes.
You might have to take it further back because you're going to sound like this.
Please buy tickets. Yes.
I was talking with you with your
level
so high, just
saying, Nishkumar.co.uk
into the microphone like this.
First of all, flawless impression.
Right? Yeah, that's exactly
how Nishkumar.co.uk. You nailed my accent.
How are you feeling, Nish? How are you doing? How are you feeling emotionally?
I'm fine. I love it.
You love it?
Yeah, I have a great time at the Fringe. I've had a slightly more hectic Fringe than usual.
Oh, how come?
Because I've been presenting some BBC Two arts coverage. Watch out, Yentop. I'm an arts journalist now.
What's good?
Alan Yentop.
I smiled, but I didn't know who he meant.
Alan Yentop is this guy who used to present arts documentaries, and he's a very sort of serious, austere individual.
Like you. Which
I was sort of offsetting my public image as a kind of roguish clown.
I know, I get it.
And from and that was the source. That's what that joke was.
For more of those, nishkumar.co.uk.
Nishkumar.co.uk.
He's smashing it here.
Tickets available.
The cabaret bar.
Some of the tickets broke. Some of the ticket links broken. Please use Google.
Right. So
the topic of this podcast is about how to cope with rejection,
yes,
and how to bounce back.
I inherently associate bouncing back with Alan Partridge's book.
I've not read it.
Yeah, it's no. In the TV show, he's like obsessed with the idea that he's bouncing back the whole time. And in my head, I'm like, am I the Alan Partridge of comedy?
You're bouncing back.
Well, maybe. I mean, we all laugh at poor Alan, but maybe, you know,
he's all right. To be learned
he's,
from him.
He's laughing. He's bouncing back.
He is bouncing back.
Yeah. So it's about rejection. It's about getting over it. It's about, you know, recognizing it.
No. And Nish is in a good sort of position because, as a comedian, consistent rejection, I'm presuming.
Consistent,
unless
yeah.
you were literally like, I'd like to be a comedian and then just went on to Life in Apollo, yeah. which is horrific if that happened. But I know it didn't. And I just think also, as a human, this is not going to be a podcast episode where we just talk about being a comedian. And so that was also a little subtle. Don't just talk about being a comedian. Just about
some podcasts
lives.
Have the briefing before the show. Not on Nobody Panic. Yeah. Live
very
briefing.
Much a sweet seat of your pants, obviously. we're going to start with some of your amazing adult things that you've done this
yes.
week.
Yes. I'd
like to start off on this is how
I just think it's quite mean and jealous. I normally edit that out, but it's going in as is.
Yeah.
So
somebody's was got up before 10 a.m. on holiday, underline, oh, woo, wow, which was all good and well, and then it says, and went for a 5k run, brackets twice.
On holiday! Who was that? I think we should applaud to offset the
yay! Well, that's amazing.
I hate to be Captain Maths over here, but did you do a 10k?
Did you do a fucking...
split over 2 days.
Okay, great, right, great. Right, still, right, that's more than I've ever done in my life. Okay, so this is good. Looked up council tax bans before arranging flat viewings. That's wow, genuinely good, because I always forget that. When, I mean, I've not been... renting or buying?
Renting,
yeah, great.
Amazing. That is really extremely grown up. Well,
that's
done.
That's so good.
Yeah, I didn't want to cast aspersions about the audience, but I looked at the average age and in my head was like, renting.
No, yeah, of course! But the other one we had, there was quite a few like, just bought a flat.
Really?
We're like, okay.
You should play a new game called Renting or Bell End.
That would be really good and non-judgy. That's nice and kind.
Welcome to the show. You're
ready
or
not? Nish, read some out.
I've got quite... This is a very grown up one. Changed savings account to get better interest.
Ooh. I don't know what that means, but really great.
It
no,
means,
I do know what it means. Okay. I'm just doing it for comedic effect. Now I look like an idiot. I'm very great. Who was that? Oh, well yeah, done.
That's
well
good,
done.
Job,
good job. Good job.
I hope
job,
your interest was really good.
Use my gym membership for the first time since signing up.
Yay! Yes. I'm trying to, it doesn't catch on, it's not easy to do. Okay, someone walked and didn't get an Uber. That's great. I think that is genuinely really excellent. Sometimes you've just got to Uber it, but that's really great.
Also, the Uber situation in Edinburgh is absolutely diabolical.
It's hilarious, yeah.
There's like three small cars. When you open the app, you're like, whoa, this does not... What happened?
Yeah, and it's like 20 minutes to get to you, and you're like, this isn't... Yeah.
It's what I imagine Uber's like in I Am Legend.
Great.
Such a
Nish
trip.
Really. But Nish bringing the kind of pop culture element to Nobody Panic, serious, which we don't have because we don't watch or consume any media.
I'm going to be thinking about that for a while. Go for it.
Oh, great. I haven't read this beforehand, so I'm just going to go for it. There's no iron in my accommodation, and I refused to wear an unironed shirt, so I steamed them in the shower.
Oh,
this is growing up on two levels, because I've not ironed anything in, I think, since 2009. Genuinely, that's really
levels.
Great.
Look, what you got?
I've got a very festival specific one. Pre-booked my, and they've for some reason capitalised the word fringe at the end. So someone's pre-booked their tickets. That's
great.
That's great.
Well
done.
Yeah.
Who was
go
that?
On. Did my eyebrows on the train with no mirror this morning. Brackets. Not really that adult. I look mad now. And then before the brackets, I should have got up earlier. And also, I haven't had breakfast.
Me neither. I was late.
Tessa was late. She absolutely smashed it. I was so late.
Tessa was so late.
Bought and used vacuum storage bags.
Woo-woo! They are. Moved back home from living in Paris for 6 months for my degree. Very adult decision. It's hard to make that choice. I like that. Entered a bar. I need to realise I wasn't... Now, does that say butlered, battered, or... Bothered! I wasn't... Yes, bothered! That makes more sense than butlered, doesn't it? I entered a bar. I just realised I didn't have a butler, so I left. Entered a bar. I need to realise I wasn't bothered and left without a drink. Is that right? Have I read that out right?
Yeah.
Yes, you weren't asked. That's great. I like that. I like that as well. Go on.
What, you just thought, it's not for me?
It's not for me.
Yeah.
Just leave it. Making a decision, I making a choice.
Yes, yeah, so this happened this morning.
No.
Because I feel
no,
like that was the right decision. No.
9 a.m.
Yeah, right, okay.
9 a.m. Didn't want a drink. So adult.
Moved into a flat in London.
Yes. Very good. Very adult.
Survived being on tour with three smelly boys without getting into debt.
So many elements to that.
So much going on there.
I didn't realise.
This feels like this one did three different lines, so it feels like everyone passed it along writing a different part of the story. Surviving on tour with three semi boys without getting into debt. Okay. But either way, well done.
So many elements are very adult. Nish.
I bought not just one, but two pens in my bag today, and they have been useful.
Yes! Yes! We don't give anybody any pens to write these down with, so I make the audience work as a team together. This one was, booked my driving test. Well,
very,
is equally well done. Well done. And my final one was, in a desperate attempt to make my five a day, I bought a whole bag of salad from Tesco's and ate it like crisps.
But adults and not adults. Yeah. They're my favourite.
That's the best one. You managed it. Well done.
Would be not as nice as crisps.
Yeah.
Not as nice. You got about a
here
million
we go.
More.
Yeah, I've got a bunch more. Travelled around Germany for 3 weeks alone to force myself to learn German.
Sehr good.
I did the same thing, but by travelling alone, I mean did an AS level. I was totally prepared for writing adult thing down and bought a pen with me.
I mean, there's so many pen-based ones.
There's a lot of pen-based ones. People are really proud of the pens. This one's got a smiley face on it, which does somewhat undermine the whole premise. Scheduling this show in as a break for preparing for an interview.
Oh, gosh, good luck with the interview. Who's that?
Me.
Good luck.
What are you interviewing for?
Journalist posted.
Yes. Nice. We'll cut it out so you don't know.
Turned up to work on time.
Simple thing.
Base level humanity.
Right. Right. I breathed.
Bare minimum.
Yeah. I got put all my clothes on in the right order.
Final one.
Here we go. Probably quite fitting because it's a final one, as it's another pen one and it's got another smiley face. In a way, it's sort of bringing together all of the themes of the correspondence. Had a pen in my bag when asked to write this. Smiley face.
Great.
Right.
So
good.
Give yourself a round of applause. Yeah.
Well done. Really good. Shall we just pop into rejection?
Absolutely, let's pop in. Let's get in there.
Okay, fine. Easy question. Nish, have you ever been rejected?
Yes. I mean,
okay, bye.
How deep do you want to go with this? Because I've been coming to the Edinburgh Festival. This is my 12th year,
which means
it's a full year of my life. And I started coming when I was 21. And now I am 32. And the sea is filled with ghosts of my sexual rejection.
Like,
the number of places people have refused to sleep with me in the city. Like, I should genuinely, next year I'm thinking of doing a site-specific show.
You should get, have you seen those guys walking around with the headsets on?
With the headsets.
You should do that, a walking tour of Nish's lost loves, yeah. I would go on that.
This is this spot just around the back of the underbelly is where a girl from Leeds told me, absolutely not, you seem weird.
Oh my god, I'd pay good money. I'd pay £10 for that.
Yeah, actually would. That's a great idea for sure.
Yeah, I think it's...
You've done 12 years on the trot?
No, I did. I had a break last year. So I did 11 years, break last year, back here this year. I mean, I do love it beyond the odd sort of... It is weird coming back to the same place over and over again. And now, at this point, starting to feel a little bit like that last series of Scrubs.
Yeah.
Where it's like, why are Turk and JD still here?
Yeah.
they become the teachers, but it seems sad.
Yeah. do they become the head doctors?
Yeah, they become like it becomes like a teacher.
They should never be head doctors. They should always be the interns.
Yeah, exactly.
They should have stopped.
Somebody described this the other day as like you should have stopped.
I've just realised what that sounded like.
Somebody described this the other day as like we're all on Love Island, but like we've been here for 10 years. So every time you're like, oh, do you think they'll get together? And they're like, no, they got together like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And now everyone is just these like quite like good friends, and like there's no more. There's no free song. There's nothing left for us.
But in terms of you say you've been here for 12 years.
Yeah.
Does that also imply that you presumably, like I say, didn't just walk on to Life of the Apollo? You had a couple of hard times here too?
No.
And you kept coming back?
Yeah, I did keep coming back. The first...
A real Parkinson, like, like...
Someone has to keep some sort of fucking order.
I would have respected Parkinson so much more if just every so often when Billy Connolly had gone off on one, he'd been like, look, William, can we get some fucking order back in here, please? Good Lord.
Good God, man.
Good Lord.
I
think part of the reason that I love Edinburgh is that I started doing comedy here when I was a student in the same student group that then birthed Stevie Martin and Tessa Coates.
Yes.
So I did a couple of years here. The reason I liked Edinburgh was because for the first 5 years of me doing comedy, so I graduated in 2007, and then I had a full-time day job. I had to have a full-time job. I was, recreationally admining. But I had to, I financially had to have a full-time job for 5 years.
Yeah.
And then the last year I had a part-time job. So really from 2007 until 2013, I was a hobbyist comedian essentially.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was going to work all day and then going and doing gigs at night. And the reason that I always love Edinburgh is because Edinburgh was the 1 month of the year where I wouldn't have to do a job and I would get to feel like a real comedian.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that, I think that's why I have this kind of reservoir of affection for the city and the festival. Because in the rest of the year, or it did not go well.
just broad strokes, how did you deal with that? How did you deal with outside of Edinburgh? You're like, oh, I'm still a madman job.
Yeah.
And it also seeing, because you didn't go like as a solo comedian like immediately, did you? You did stuff with other people, and then you also like had some time out, and then you kind of did your, was it like you were 26 or 27 when you did your first solo show?
My birthday is in August as well, so it's, I mean, there's a lot going on. But I turned 27. No, it's
Sunday.
That would be a horrible way to find out you two were not invited.
Yeah.
It's Sunday the 26th.
Right.
It's on Wikipedia, concerningly. I turned 27 the year that I did my first solo hour. And
right.
The first solo hour was the start of me being able to phase out my day job and and be a full-time comedian, which that process finished in 2013 after Edinburgh when I did the show. So yeah, it was, I don't want to get too morose with this, but the first half decade was pretty toilet.
How did you keep going?
To some extent, I don't know.
Okay.
Like, it was one of those things where you would just hold on to whatever kernel of positivity you could. So I was a particularly bad comedian, I think, because everyone else did some like competition or showcase. There's a bunch of things that you can do, like the BBC New Act competition, the Laughing Horse, the Amused Moves. I am the only comedian who failed to get to the final of any of them and is still working, from what I know. I think me and Ellis James are like the two ones who never got anything. And I auditioned for all the showcases here. So there was like the Comedy Reserve, Big Value.
Okay.
So there are all these auditions you can do, and I failed at all of them.
No, I didn't know this. I guess you didn't talk about it openly.
All right, Steve, you want to come for a pint and listen to my sad life? It was a lot of rejection. And
right.
I think I didn't deal with it very productively, I think, because I was very young, like in my early 20s. My solution to it was just to get angry and drink, which is obviously not particularly productive. But I think eventually I realised that there are positive lessons to be taken from being rejected. And sometimes, it's a really weird thing, sometimes when you're being rejected, you occasionally have to go, which doesn't sound very healthy, but occasionally you have to be like, maybe there's a reason.
Yeah.
And maybe actually the solution is not to get angry and say, well, I should be getting these things. But maybe the solution is to go, oh, maybe I'll just work harder. And if I think something that I'm doing is good is being bounced back, instead of getting angry, why don't I just try and do something better and move the goalposts that way?
Well, there's that thing as well of like, if you're getting rejected for things, then you're sort of crossing things off. And it just means that there's another avenue that you should be taking.
Right. Yeah.
So actually it means that like you actually managed to get to where you did without all of that stuff, which is great. And you probably wouldn't have maybe done the stuff that you have done if you'd have just like smashed all those auditions and smashed all those awards. It would have probably happened sooner. No. but it would have, maybe you wouldn't have had to have been so creative, and maybe your shows wouldn't have been so good because you had that fire in you of like, well, fuck everybody. Like, you didn't, so I'm going to really smash this.
Yeah, and also,
show.
Like, I mean, at one point in 2010, I was writing a double act show with my friend Tom Neenan, who's also here doing a show and is amazing. And Tom and I were writing a show, and I thought at the time, I was like, maybe, and I was having real fun working with Tom after having a couple of really tricky years doing stand-up. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just stop doing stand-up because it's not working. It's been 3 years. And I'm having more fun doing this stuff with Tom. And then at the very last minute, my friend Daniel Simonson, who is also here, he's a wonderful Norwegian comedian, he got a free Fringe slot and he said, do you want to do half an hour of stand-up every day with me? And in my head, I thought, well, I'm going to stop doing stand-up. And so there was no professional imperative to do this thing because I just thought I've had enough of it. But when I came here, I was like, well, I'll do it anyway because I'm here, I may as well do another show. And because I stopped thinking about myself in terms of a career progression and just focused on the work that I was producing, I suddenly started having better gigs. Because instead of sitting there thinking, how can I progress professionally? What are the things, steps that I need to take? I just focused on the work.
That's so interesting.
And that was that 2010 was a complete game changer in my stand-up, because I junked all my material and started again from scratch. And all I was focused on was, is this funny and is this good? And not thinking about, how can I get into
it? Yeah, you're like thinking about the night, that night that you have to perform,
yeah, exactly,
it, rather than like,
absolutely,
oh, well, who's going to be in, and like, what does this mean for my career?
Yeah, completely.
I feel like that fully about, because I mean, obviously we're talking about it in terms of comedy, but I genuinely do think that transposes across pretty much every career,
yeah,
not creative either. Like, the moment you start worrying too much about where you fit in a career, where you fit in your life, you can spook yourself out, and you can just, you know, you're not producing your best work.
Completely.
And the moment you think, well, hang on, wait, ignore that. What do I want to do every day at, like, you know, 9:30 till 5?
Yeah.
Like, what do I want to spend, like, 90% of my life doing? Is it this? No. Is it that? Yes. And then you can at least start to move towards the things that you want to do. I don't know.
That's such a good way of putting it, because you spend so much of your life working. And when you're doing something for that percentage of your life, you have to derive some kind of joy from it. I don't know anyone that is excelling in their work, in whatever field it is, that of the people that I'm mates with, that doesn't to some extent love what they do or have some kind of passion.
Yeah, you never hear somebody like the CEO being like, I hate this job. Guys, full disclosure.
Yeah. When I first graduated, and we all sort of graduated into like a flooded job market where it was very, and I think probably it will in the future, right? You know, when we all, I think we're all similar-ish age, that like everyone sort of came out and there weren't obvious jobs to go into,
yeah,
and everyone had to definitely a phase where they were like, oh shit, like now what? And there was all graduate schemes and unpaid internships, and we were like, oh no. And if we had come out into a different generation where we'd all gone straight into work and we'd been relatively well paid, we maybe would have sat in a job that we didn't particularly,
yeah,
love,
yeah, sure,
right from the start. And so as a result, everybody had to go through this like dreadful being turned away from so many things that eventually you had to end up with something that you actually really did like, because you had to find that. Whereas if we'd all just walked into, you know, I remember like the first thing I applied for was like being an engineer at the Mars company.
With your anthropology degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was like, yeah, why not? And I, you know, if I had, I'd probably still be there, you know, if I got it.
Yeah,
so I would
have, sure,
been like, yeah, why not? I'll stay at the Mars factory. I'd probably be CEO of Mars by now. And like, generally, that was the first thing I applied for. And there was that such a long time after I graduated where I just would apply for all these mad internships and all kinds of things on the internet, and there were so many. I remember making a sort of collage of all these due to the volume of applicants, we cannot provide feedback messages I would get, because,
yeah,
there would just be so many. I was being turned away from so many things, and I was doing all kinds of crackers jobs, which it obviously I was not right for, and so I was being turned down correctly because it was not what I was supposed to do.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And I think I probably talked about this before. But I did this internship with a PR science company, and they were really wonderful to me, but I was terrible at my job. And then I left because I had to legally. And also they were like, you're so bad, please go away. But they were so nice to me. And they got me this card that was just like the good luck card that happened to be in the shop, but it was a drawing of a signpost, and it said it that way and not it that way. And it said, go for it. And I still have it because it was such a turning point in my life of like, oh, it's okay. I can go through all these things and they just be not it. And that's also been, however long I've done, like, this is still a learning curve. And this is like, okay, at least I can close this door and be like, oh, not it.
Yeah.
And you can sort of take these rejections of being like, okay, it was just not that. I'll keep going until I find it.
We've been, because my cousin, the moment she started she's been doing this like degree, and it's been quite like picking the degree was quite an arduous process, and she was so like, oh, I have to go to the best place, whatever. She starts it, she hates it. She absolutely hates it. She doesn't want to do it at all. And, you know, the family are a bit like, oh, Jesus Christ. But actually, it is like, it's exactly that case. It's like, well, okay, great. It's not that. It's not it.
We can cross
it. So now we know that it's not that. Now we can focus on trying to find it.
And you think, like, and so much of that, like, rejection feels, like, so horrendous, which I want to talk about in a moment about, like, why it is so bad.
Yeah.
But it's there for a reason. It is to be like, no, this was not the right thing. And all these lovely ladies who turned you down in alleyways behind the underbelly. Like,
look at the lovely lady you got now.
Right? Yeah, they absolutely. Were right.
His girlfriend's amazing.
They were the right.
She's a great lady.
She's a great lady, and they were. That was the signpost being like, not it. Like, close this door.
Not around the back of the underbelly.
Not around the back of the underbelly.
Fair
this
enough.
Is not a good choice.
If people listening to this do not know the names of venues in Edinburgh, that is going to sound seamless. Oh yeah.
Around the back of the underbelly.
The underbelly is a venue. The underbelly is an upside down cow.
The underbelly is even worse, and it actually sounds even more sinister. It's actually technically an abandoned book depository.
Is that horrible?
Yeah,
that
because the grubby.
How did they put the books would have all gone off.
I think hence it being abandoned.
Oh my god, it's like cholera in there. I hate
it's
it.
It's horrible.
Anyway, I want to.
There's flies everywhere.
He comes to all our podcasts, actually.
He does. Yeah, he's a massive fan.
He's a big fan.
Can I just see your... Look, can I just join you in your love back down the back of the underbelly rejection tales?
Yeah.
That I once went to bed for a week. Do you remember? I couldn't get out of bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the story.
I kissed a boy once.
Uh-oh.
Once. Left, stayed at his house, but there was only kissing, and left in the morning. Honestly, I was like, well, we're married now. I skipped down the road in a way that I'm so embarrassed by now. And I was like, la da da da, gonna marry this boy, like that. Good morning, the bakers, like this. I have found it, like, this is the boy for me, and we're done. It was like finding a perfect winter coat, and you're like, I never have to look again, you know?
Yeah.
That's how it felt. Also, love. And and then saw him the next night at another party, and I was like, he'll be waiting on the steps, and like, he'll be excited to see me, and blah, 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 blah. And he ignored me for that whole evening until 3 o'clock in the morning, and every part of my body was just screaming at me and being like, get out, get out, get out. You know he doesn't like you, get out of here. But I just couldn't stop myself. And I like did that thing where I saw him go up the stairs, then I like came up the stairs to be like, oh, well, fancy seeing you on the stairs. Like, like that. And then I was like, hey, like, what, you know, what's like, do you want to, like, what, how are you? Because we're married, so how are you doing? I was like, I remember being like, just like, say, like, what's going on? Like, what's happening here? And he said to me, he was like, oh, okay, like, and I was so ready for this rejection. And then he said, I don't know, like, what you want. Like, I don't know if you, like, want to go out with me. To which I, like, was like, oh my God, yes. I went, oh my God, yes.
Oh.
And then he went, sorry, because that's not what I want. And
I mean, that is absolutely on him in the phrasing of that question.
I was like, that is the wrong way to
Don't leave a gap as well. Don't leave a gap after
Don't leave a gap. Don't leave a gap. because it was enough space for me to go, oh my god, yes, like that, to say that.
That was sick. But yeah, I totally forgot the details. Yeah. They are worse than I remember.
You did so well. Because yeah. That's the thing, is like, I was ready, I was like protecting myself, and yeah. I was like, and he was, I was ready for him to say like it wasn't happening, and me to be like, okay, but then him to offer me that, all my armor just like fell off. I was like cloud nine, followed by like just the like the unbelievable plummet of that's not what I meant. And I remember him going and me being like, no, cool, absolutely fine, like there's like twitching, and then I remember not being able to like get myself down the stairs, like I couldn't even like walk properly, and then I like honestly went to bed for a week. Yeah. I just was so like crushed by it.
Yeah.
Not particularly, just because I'd like judged it so badly, and I had like put my whole like heart out on the line, and now in retrospect, obviously, like he's not, obviously, I mean, he's quite odd, you know, like he's, and it's like, it's not it, like it wasn't supposed to be. And like, this is when I remember somebody having to like, my housemate having to like kick me to get me out of bed, and me just being like, but he was the best boy in the world. And I was like, but he was like, but he isn't, because he said he didn't want to go out with you. So like, obviously he's not that yeah. great. Like move, let's move on now.
Yeah.
And I took it so, so unbelievably hard.
That you need to have, like, unfortunately, you do need to have a number of rejections in order to figure out how to deal with
and
them.
And to, like, know that you can bounce back, so that when you are feeling that, you don't think, like, well, I assume I feel like this for the rest of my life.
Yeah, because even though you stayed in bed for a week, you then still got out of bed after a week. Like, you didn't disappear into a mist, and that was the end of you.
Yes, you're right. They were like, what? You know what? I never saw Tessa again. Oh, no, a boy said he didn't want to go out with her, and then she evaporated. Because honestly, that's how it felt. I felt like I'd evaporated.
My arms like feel like they've like disappeared when someone tells me they don't want to go out.
Yeah,
I get really like. Ugh. I had a thing in Edinburgh where there was this guy who, you know sometimes guys and girls, I'm sure, but as I'm straight, I haven't had that experience with girls. But a very very like flirty naturally. So you're like, well. This is a shoe-in, and then they're married. Does anyone else have?
Steve's laying down some sweet observational comedy.
Thank you. No, I had that, and I'd just been dumped by like someone. I was like, well, marriage, and it wasn't. And I was an absolute mess. And then this guy was just so cool. He was like asking me to go to shows and like being, and it was just me and him. And then we'd go for dinner afterwards. And then like 3 days in, he mentioned his wife, and I was like. And I was so like, I was like,
you vomited on him.
Yes, I vomited while saying, excuse me, what? And then I couldn't feel my arms, and then I couldn't walk. It was a hard time. Took it quite badly, just, if I'm honest. But I think, but then the next time that happens, it doesn't feel as bad. And the next time it happens, it doesn't feel as bad. And I think if you're one of those people as well, that's why a lot of people who go to, I don't know, a lot of very kind of high-achieving people have a lot of problems, I feel like, because they've got into, I don't know, their first choice at Oxford or whatever, and they've got like, you know, excellent grades, they've never dropped anything, they've got the perfect boyfriend, they've got the, and then when one thing crumbles, yeah. they don't know how to deal with it, and that can completely knock
a friend of mine, extremely high-achieving at school, just like smashed everything, everything was very, very easy for her, so she just, you know, went to Cambridge, was no longer top of the year and didn't know what to do. Yeah. And so like that rejection, I remember it happening to me when I went to secondary school, and I went from a village primary school where there was 10 of us in the year, and so we were all on the netball team because we had to be. we were all on all the teams, you know, right. So it had never occurred to us that we weren't any good at something. And then I went to secondary school and suddenly, like, you know, there's 5 netball teams and like, you know.
You're not on any of them.
And I hadn't made the cut on the D team, like, you know, so. And then it hit me then, and I was 11 years old, and so then I bounced back, and so I had mine when I was 11, but she didn't have hers until she was at university, and she just totally didn't know what to, like, couldn't cope at all.
Because then the stakes were a bit higher, yeah, it's and not a netball not, team, it's exactly. your career, or it's your, you know, your parents are paying for you to be there, and then you're like, I don't want to be here anymore, and there's a lot more pressure.
I think one of the best things that happened to me in my life was not getting into Oxford.
Yes,
I know that sounds like an absolute champagne problem. Yeah. But, like, it genuinely was like the thing that, because when I was 18, ooh, spicy vibe. Because
what,
I was like
that?
Super confident and like
a oh,
real
so you
piece
were,
of shit. Yeah.
And you were a piece of
like,
shit.
Well, no, not, yeah, I mean, fine. Like, but like, I was like, I mean, this will surprise literally no one, but I was like the head of the debating society. And I really thought I was the shit. And because I was always very good at exams. I think, again, that's why I like Edinburgh, because I like that construct of the year that you build towards something and then at the last minute you're kind of tested on it. That's the kind of classic, that's the way that I operated best. And I think that not getting into Oxford was the first time that I was ever like, oh, maybe I'm not. And also, it wasn't one of those things where afterwards, after the interview, I walked out and I was like, nailed it. I walked out of that interview going, yeesh.
Yeah. And that was, and that's the thing, like, it was, at the time, it felt like you weren't allowed to tell him, but it was those people, but really, like, the world saying, like, this actually isn't the right thing for you.
Yeah, and it put some humility in me, because I went to a grammar school, which is basically, like, a private school with none of the money, but 10 times the arrogance. So, like, from the age of 11 at that school, they're like, you guys are actually the best, because you're getting this amazing education, and some chumps are paying for it. And, like, it built up my confidence to such an extent, and in retrospect, if I'd got into Oxford, I would have been insufferable.
Yeah.
Actually, that first like stage of ridiculous, Stevie, just
absolutely yes.
As it is, you're on the fence now.
What is that thing that you call yourself? Like something about a jetpack.
Jetpack.
You called yourself like a jetpack wanker.
Oh yes, yeah. I've various names for myself as a young man. Jet-propelled wanker, chocolate Frasier. Like these are all the words I would describe myself as. Chocolate Frasier is pretty much the most accurate description of me when I was about 17 years old. And it's so weird in retrospect reframing. I can't believe I hadn't even thought about this when we were talking about rejection. Every morning I'm like, a part of me is like, that rejection helped me so much because it introduced a bit of humility to me, and that humility. You can then translate that into building a work ethic.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's so, so useful in the future.
Yeah.
And it makes you look back and be like, oh, thank God I went through that.
Thank God completely.
I didn't get that job at Mars. Thank God I didn't go to Oxford. Thank God I went through that experience. But at the time...
At the time, you don't want to hear that as well. It's like, if you're being bullied and someone goes like, it'll give you really strong character. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm 8.
Yeah. I can't do anything with that, mate. Just to put like biological bit on it, that this there's a lot of studies about like rejection and it and particularly losing a sports match as well. There's studies into like boxers and how even in like real physical pain, winners can't feel anything. Like they've won and so they don't know until a while afterwards how hurt they are. Whereas the loser feels everything so intensely, and they have to. It's very intense to like build, even though they've been through the same thing and are having the same physical amount of pain, one of them isn't having it at all and one of it's feeling so intensely because your body is like, don't ever do that again, like don't ever let us lose, because like the stakes for a human being, you know, thousands of years ago,
physically
the stakes were like, well, if you got into a fight with another, you know, alpha male, like, and you're going to be kicked out of the group now and you're going to die, and so like that's what your body is going through every time. And so even though, you know, the nice married man or the lady and the boy I kissed one time, you know, really rationally not a massive deal, but for your body, you're like, your body's like death
yes
now. Like,
I'm being cast out from society,
I'm being
will
cast
die
out
alone.
And I will die alone,
which is why it feels like those kind of things like, oh, I'm going to die alone, you do feel that when it happens,
yeah.
So you're like, well, I'll never amount to anything, you feel like you're sort of cast out in the kind of tundra,
and so part of it, there's a thing about this thing called like the 50-50 theory, that like half of the rejection is from the thing, like you've been not let into Cambridge or the boys turned you down or whatever, but the other half you do all yourself, like you've done all that negative self-thinking, and so the half of it you can't do anything about, like that somebody has turned you down, but the other half, that's on you, like you can be in control of that and you cannot beat yourself up so much.
Yeah, I think it's like, because I was reading, I'm obviously reading a lot about like how to, you know, how to deal with it and all that sort of stuff, and it's always the same sort of things with everything. It's kind of, you should acknowledge that it's hard, you shouldn't try and push it away and be like, no, I'm fine, because it will just pop out in another circumstance, like, you know, it's you need to feel it, but then also feel that it's like, treat yourself kindly, which I think is what you're saying as well, like it's all about your perspective, and you can't lose perspective. You can for a bit, and then you have to get it back.
Like
talking to other people is really helpful, especially like, you know, not bringing it back to the fringe, but bringing it back to the fringe. It's a constant, like, it's like a hotbed of constant kind of mini rejections, or if you do a bad show and someone else is doing an absolute banger next door, and you're like, ugh! And like all of that, you kind of have to constantly like take these like little tiny things and chat to people closest to you, because everybody is suffering from rejections. Everybody, like, you're doing incredibly well, but like it's kind of really great to hear that for a few years you were like, ugh. And I think that it's heartening for other people who have just maybe had a bad rejection or whatever, to go like, well, look, like, he kept going.
And yeah, I think the more I think about, as we're talking here, the more I think about in your life, how you react to rejection ends up defining your entire life.
Yeah.
Like, it's like one of the most important things in your life is how you process it. And I think for a long time, I thought the solution was to hate myself and just take it out on myself. But in a funny way, that was an expression of my ego, because at the base level of me going, oh, well, I've been rejected, I must sort of try and destroy myself. Like, fundamentally, that came from a place of ego, because the assumption was that I was so good.
Right, how could this have happened?
How could this have happened?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I must then just drink for days, because that's what an artist does. Whereas actually, you were being rejected because your jokes were a bit of shit. And what you should probably do is try and write some better jokes and crack on that way. And it took me about half a decade to work that out. And so if I can save anyone the trouble, it's not constructive for you to that kind of self-loathing response is not constructive. And actually, I discovered, it took me my entire 20s to discover the difference between self-loathing and self-criticism. And self-criticism is useful and helps you process rejection and move on from it. And self-loathing is an absolutely complete waste of your time.
Yeah.
I mean, which isn't to say that I don't hate myself, because I do. I just make less of a big deal. I think that's all being in your 30s is. Like, I know lots of people who have come to this place of self-acceptance, and like, I really love myself and I'm really proud of myself. I've come to a point where I'm like, look, I'm stuck with you. You don't like me. I'm in an unhappy marriage with my own personality.
But
we make it work. Yeah. That's the thing. The two of us make it work. We don't like each other. If I'm honest, the sex has dried up. But we make it work now. And the self-loathing just runs as a constant hum in the background, but yeah. It doesn't actually interfere with my work.
You know how to deal with it now.
Yeah, I know that's just part of my life. And actually now, when something works, so like the last two, I had a really good show 3 days ago, and the last two shows, so I'm doing a work in progress show, I'm changing bits and bobs every day. The last two have been not good. And so for me now, that is quite helpful, because you go, right, I've recorded it, why was it not good? Instead of going, it wasn't good, now I'm like, why was it not good? What are the things that you can do to improve it?
That's like a mixture of experience and you accepting that is how it works now. And also you having had rejections and you've now learned from them. And I think that is the crucial thing to take away from the podcast episode today, which is you've got to learn from it. Like, you can absolutely have like, rather than drink for 3 days, maybe drink for one night.
One night, 24 hours.
Yeah. And then be like, right, okay, get back up. What can I do to stop that happening again? Or what can I do because of this?
Don't go on a 2-week bender and give your wallet and phone to a man who just asked you for them. What can only be described as the most polite mugging in human history.
And you tell me from someone else's phone, you're like, I gave a homeless man my phone.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty good stuff. It's a pretty funny thing to talk about in retrospect, apart from my friend Alice Farron Bradley, who does not find it very funny at all,
because
she spent 48 hours trying to track me down when I vanished. Oh dear!
Oh my god.
I can imagine, allegedly, someone else that happened to.
I think it's exactly that, of like finding that path between a little bit of like, oh well, F you anyway, like, I'm all right.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
All right, Jack. And then little 20% of that, 20%, fuck.
Yeah.
And then 80%, okay, thank you for the notes, let me take that on board. How can I improve and be better, and where can I channel this energy, and what can I do with this? So I think because I think it also doesn't help a little bit the like, well, just keep going narrative.
Yeah,
100%. Because 100%.
When I was, you know, really going through this and didn't have a job, and I was really obsessed with Colonel Sanders,
I bring him up so much.
I love him. The KFC man.
I mean, I know exactly who the Colonel is.
People might not know. I don't know.
Stephen, I'm afraid you don't get this body shape without being au fait with the work of the Colonel.
So the Colonel, firstly, for the last 20 years of his life, he was never seen in public without his string tie and hat, because he was now living the brand. But that is by the side. The second thing is that he had this... He's quite old. He's like in his 60s, and he's just a guy selling... He has a chicken shop, and he's selling it on the side of the road. And then they divert the highway, so now nobody comes past where he is. And so he packs up his stuff, and he goes on the road for 3 years trying to sell his chicken recipe to people. I really read about him, because he gets told no like 580 times or something like insane. And he was a real and then he eventually sold the chicken and became Colonel Sanders or whatever. Yeah. But I think this that narrative of just keep on going, sell that chicken, we keep peddling this just believe in yourself and keep doing it, and there needs to be that, and definitely still believe in yourself, but also take on board the what if someone needs to change the chicken? Why aren't people, let's regroup on the chicken.
Maybe change tack. Think about other meats you might want to peddle.
Maybe tweak the secret recipe.
When you say it I was here for 12 years and then finally now I'm here, I just kept peddling it. We don't push enough the I actually thought I've totally I threw out all my material, I started again, I totally rethought and I took on
but
what
it took
notes.
As well it took doing something else. You did a thing with two
yeah yeah I stepped away
it took doing something else to then be you basically did a different thing.
And also this is a sort of boring technical thing specific to comedy, but when I worked with Tom Neenan, we would write our scripts and then plug the computer into his television and go through line by line in his living room.
Yeah.
Does this need to be there? Is this funny? If it's not funny, is this leading to something funny? And I realised that was a level of scrutiny I was not exercising in my stand-up. There was just stuff that I was just saying that never worked. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't with this. And I was why in one facet of my life am I exercising this level of immense scrutiny? And then in the other facet of my life, which is notionally the career progression I want for the rest of my life, why am I just going...
So doing something different is a really good you're right, because that's Colonel Sanders is sort of the exception to the rule.
I think he's not the exception so much as we only hear this marzipan layer of the story rather than hearing everything, and I'm sure along the way he did change the chicken or he did do more stuff.
There's a really great Twitter hashtag called hashtag share your rejections that's very happening at the moment, and it's really great. It's just loads, it's a lot of arty people, but it's a lot of people who've done very well being I got rejected for everything, and then it's really, really great. So look at that hashtag and get some inspiration.
I looked at quite a lot of those hashtags, and because when I saw share your rejection I was like, sit down, everyone. Kumar's about to crack out a tweet thread. But I do think that share your rejection hashtag just slightly peddled the thing I got rejected from RADA, and look at me now.
True.
Boutros, Garley, whatever. I don't know. But it's it cuts out that middle thing of, and I think that the percentage thing you just said is so important. It's your response to rejection has to be a mixture. You have to get, if you have too much of self-criticism, it lapses into self-loathing and is unproductive. But if you have not enough of it and you just go, I'm the greatest, you end up singing Hello to the Baker or whatever. It's that line in how you respond to rejection that is the most critical thing. It has to be enough self-criticism but not too much, and enough self-belief but not too much. And in that sweet spot, you get stuff done, I think.
That is an excellent point to end on, because we're going to have to end.
We're nearly out of time. Yeah.
And thank you so much, Nish. That was so great. Really, really useful. I feel genuinely a lot better about that. I really do. I'll be like... But actually, that was really lovely. And thank you, Tessa. And thank you to Stevie.
Thank you for having me on, Stevie.
So next week on Parking, I'll be interviewing William Connolly.
Stars.
If you have any ideas for future podcasts, tweet us at NobodyPanicPod. Me at Stevie M. The S is a 5.
Me at Tessa Goes. You at Nish
Kumar. Mr. Nish Kumar.
Mr. Nish Kumar.
On Twitter.
So sorry, sir.
Great.
There's a guy called Nish Kumar who got the Twitter handle, and if I'm honest, has become increasingly ill-tempered.
Oh.
Because people do forget them. Yeah. People do not. I'm not a natural mister.
Nobody on Twitter is a sad guy.
That's what I mean. I'm not an instinctive mister, and so a lot of the time people will just go, "You were fucking shit on that program yesterday," and this guy's like a software programmer from Bangalore. He's like, "I wasn't on it."
No one's having a tougher time than John Lewis.
John Lewis.
He lives in Michigan, and he's called John Lewis.
He spends his whole time just going, "Not me. The wrong one."
The customer service department. He's very sweetly.
He should just get off.
John Lewis should technically employ him. That would be a way to sort of resolve. Yeah, just have him on retainer.
And email us as well, nobodypanicpodcast@gmail.com. Big thanks to Nish Kumar. Go on nishkumar.co.uk to see his tour.
Thank you too.
Thank you so much for coming.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.